Chris Jones and the Night Drivers recently released The Choosing Road, brand new album from them. I think it's as good an album as I've heard in the last year, top to bottom. Chris Jones is going to be my guest. We'll talk all about the band, how this album came to be, and interesting stories along the way. Chris is has many platforms to influence bluegrass listeners and readers, and he uses all those skills very well as we discuss the brand new album, The Choosing Road, which is the feature of the day. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Chris Jones about the fabulous brand new album, The Choosing Road. I'm really happy to welcome Chris Jones back to Unreal Bluegrass. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing fine, Steve. Thank you so much for having me back. It's been a while, and I think you won a major award since last we spoke, so congratulations.
Oh, I did. Well, you're very kind. Listen, I've been listening a lot because I try to prepare for encounters like this, and the brand new one from Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, The Choosing Road. Chris, there's a lot of really thoughty music and words in this album. And I know that's what you always do, but let me tell you this first, then, before we start. You have this position and all the many platforms that you have available and make really, really, really good use of with SiriusXM, with Bluegrass Today, and, of course, with the music itself on the recorded. Mm-hmm. And the you have a position that you very quietly take to enhance and enlarge the discussion. I would put it this way: the discussion of bluegrass music as it continues to evolve. I think maybe it's because I've been listening to this one so much, anticipating that we would connect. This album, The Choosing Road, I think has so many really, really, there's so many different levels at work. Let's put it that way, whether you meant it or not. And I think it kind of did, but there's so many different songs on here that speak to so many different issues.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that. I don't know if, I don't feel of anything about this particular album as a departure, except for like the more comfortable. It was a good songwriting year for me, and a kind of, I just felt like everything was a little more genuine, heartfelt, personal, just more of my personal stamp on things, and even the stamp of the other band members.
Well, and I think that, honestly, whether you intend to do that or not, it happens, because that's what you're doing in the songwriting and the music composition, is you're expressing personal things to you, whether they're combined with other concepts or not. It's even the title of the album, The Choosing Road, I think, when you start listening to the songs on the album in the context of just the title alone, I shouldn't even be here. I'm just going to bounce off of some things. Who you want me to be? I mean, there's a lot of things that are in the moment. Even the last tune, by the way, which is currently kind of overwhelming me, Glimpse of the Kingdom. I just think there's a lot that the title couldn't be more perfect.
Thanks a lot. Glimpse of the Kingdom is one that we had. It's sort of come out on two different albums because we wrote it originally for the we wrote it for this, but we also wrote it for the Benefit album, Come See About Me.
Sure.
That Martin Home put together as Benefit and Ivy and they trust fund. And there was supposed to be a giving theme, so I was thinking about that, and so John and I wrote that.
It is about giving, but it's also without reciting all the lyrics, which I couldn't do anyway. It's the glimpse of the good. Let's say the substitute the good of humanity in a bunch of little tiny settings. These things are really what the greater good is supposed to be represented by smaller acts of kindness.
I appreciate you picking up on that. And again, giving is only a small part of it, but it was just sort of the good of humanity giving us that glimpse of the better side of us, and in religious terms, the kingdom of God, but the little ways that we get that insight, and the other, we see that other side all the time. We see
the
greed and just controlling other people and the cheating and lying and all that stuff, but we get these glimpses through these little acts. And so I kind of wanted to each verse sort of tell a different kind of angle on it, and one is, when I observe this, I see the morning sun and this beautiful day, and see somebody else doing something, helping a stranger in some war-torn land. And then I think when I do certain things, when I share something with somebody or I talk to somebody with respect that I disagree with, something that just doesn't happen very much right now, I get that glimpse. So it sort of meant like different vantage points in each verse.
And it does, Chris. You and I think have a similar wavelength. And it's missing so much from day to day because, as you mentioned, we see so much of the opposite of recognition of things that sometimes just kind of bring us down. And I think that what this song says to me is we need to find the things that help us to remember that there's this spark. There's this little spark in all of us, and it may be small, but it actually opens up so much if you just look for it.
I appreciate you listening deeply to that.
Now, I have to tell you this. I'm waiting for someone to leave me now so that I can use the term of the first cut on the album, Your Remarkable Return. I like that. That turn of the phrase to me, I'm thinking, well, who can I make leave me, whether in reality or just symbolically? Because I love the term, Your Remarkable Return. It could mean a lot of different things. It's a great song. It starts off the album, obviously, for a reason. But I've never heard that terminology, Your Remarkable Return.
It just popped into my head, and it had that, the alliteration there,
right.
Remarkable return, and it was just, it's just one of those things that, you're just grateful for, and those things just pop in there, so there it was, and because it's kind of happy, which is not that common of bluegrass music,
no.
it felt like upbeat, key of B, let's go.
Yeah, hey, listen, this is the second album with Gina Furtado. And the reason I mention that, first of all, she's a wonderful player in her own compositions on her own projects. Do you think in terms of writing and or arranging or setting up a song with her voice? Because I think her vocals added such a different texture to the band when she joined. Banjo playing, extraordinaire. But I think her vocals, I'm wondering, to you as a songwriter, do you sometimes think about how her voice will play into these songs?
Well, yes. I mean, I think what's evolved over a number of years in my own career is getting more comfortable with the fact that I have a lower range, even though it's not it's considered a good point in bluegrass music. Well, my approach, early on when I was starting to play this music professionally, was to sing everything as high as I possibly could because I thought that's what people wanted, and I sort of neglected the lower parts. And we've had women in the band before. Kristen Scott Benson was a brief member,
right.
And Marky Sanders in the band. But by and large, over the course of over a decade, it was an all-male band. But my wife Sally did a lot of guest singing of the third part.
I have to tell you this. I love Sally's music, and I wish there were. I saw her at one of the IBMAs in Louisville many, many years ago when Kristen was doing double duty with Larry Cordell and Sally. And I bought that album.
Yeah.
As soon as they left the stage, I went and found it. And Love Hurts is what I remember. That could be the title of the album. I don't remember, but wonderful song.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Thanks. And. Well, she's still singing, but she's heavily occupied with a very successful college teaching career, and so she hasn't been able to get out and play much. We're actually going to do a few things together in Europe coming up.
Oh, good.
But she has guested on a lot of albums singing harmony, so we got that element there. But once we had it as a regular feature in the band, what that has done for me is enabled me to pitch things a little bit lower because we've got the two harmony parts above.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Gina and Mark blend really well together and blend with me. And so I think maybe unconsciously, I think when I'm writing or arranging songs, thinking about those two parts above, and that's one change on this album too, is that almost all of the harmony vocals are configured that way.
You sometimes scrape the bottom edge of a Randy Travis sound. Every once in a while, my speakers vibrate just a little bit as you go way, way down there. Which I think is nice.
Position, right? Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's not a lot of that out there at the moment. And,
nope.
And it's been good for me to just kind of be comfortable with that and develop it a little bit as opposed to trying to shy away from it.
I interrupted you. You said something about I mentioned Randy Travis, and I cut you off, which I do often.
Oh, well, you know, because especially early in his career and early in mine, we looked very similar. And people were constantly, and they still do to some extent, but as both of us aged in different ways, less so now, but at one time, people would say, hey, you look like Randy Travis, and it happened so much that, of course, you know, I'm a guitar player and lead singer on the lower side, so there's that obvious kind of people that came to people's minds, so I got really tired of it, and so I decided I was going to grow a mustache to stop this, And I remember I was in Boston. I was sitting in with a country band. I sang a song, and I got off the stage, and the guy said, you know, something, shave that mustache. You look just like Randy Travis. I said, okay, I give up.
Somebody should have asked Randy to grow a mustache, too, at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. We finally played a show together in the same event, and I met him, and you know, we look really different in person.
I'm visualizing both of you, and you know, yeah, I mean, to me, I wouldn't have made the confused part, but I certainly with the singing, I suppose, and maybe some people, maybe it's darker where they're sitting, I don't know. But yeah. Whenever I see, I mean, of course, you and John Weisberger, by the way, we need to get more attention drawn to Mark. He's such a great mandolin player. I mean, but I think he's as good as there is.
I agree with you. And, you know, not to just toot the horn of my own band member, but Mark is under-recognized. And mandolin players know. But he's a monster. He's sort of our secret weapon and a guy that has been so important to the sound of the band. And he's... through the years, you know, his tenor singing has gotten great,
yeah.
But he has a kind of a tone and rhythm, and he's such a pleasure to play with, I would like to feel free to spread the word.
I will. I don't mean just like on. I'll pronounce it Nyan's Regret, and I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. But with this instrumental from Mark and Gina, and the playing on that is phenomenal from both of them. But Mark's playing throughout. Gina has great taste, and Mark's playing behind the rest of supporting the vocals and the melody. He just does things that people don't normally do, and he does them so easily, and they're so pleasant. They're so pleasing to hear.
Yeah, he is, for lack of a better word, he's just extremely musical, and he really understands the music, and he just has a way of feeling things, and what he plays is not only a good taste, but it's also original. It doesn't sound like other people, so yeah. I really appreciate what he does.
And we're talking about Mark Stoffel. We didn't mention his name, but that's the Mark we're talking about in the band. And he's been with the band for a number of years.
About 12 years ago.
Yeah. Listen, when I see your name and John Weisberger, and then I see Tom Utes' name in a song, and then I see in the title anything about letters, I know it's going to be history, Civil War related, because that's where Tom lives in that stuff. And so the song on here, Letter to Brendan, was co-written by the three of you. And that's a great story.
It really is, and yeah, as you say, Tom is a Civil War historian, and the song was written originally and recorded in a different setting. We recorded it for one of his. He produced and co-wrote all the songs for a series of new songs about the Civil War in three volumes. It's called the 1861 Project, and Volume Two, because Tom had a connection to Ireland, an Irishman, he had lived in Ireland. He wanted the second one to be about the Irish-American involvement in the war because so many Irish immigrants, recent Irish immigrants, fought on both sides of the conflict. And so this song was his idea, and the three of us got together and wrote it in Nashville. And it was about a soldier who joined on the Union side and was writing back to his brother in Ireland at first very... optimistically and being excited to be part of something important,
right.
And then of course as things drag on, he's not feeling so good.
So you said there's a second 1861 project. Is that the?
There are three of them.
I missed that. Was the first one mostly Bruce Molsky? From reason, I think is that what I'm thinking of?
No,
I'm sorry.
No, first on all of them feature a variety of artists.
Okay.
And I too many to name to rattle off, but I know Connie Smith is on some, Bobby Bear, Sierra Hall, and the third one is all about the Battle of Franklin. And I sang at least one song on all three of them, two on the first one. This is the only one that I was involved in writing. And I just really loved how, I don't know, this felt really good to do in the studio.
It's a great, and you know, the funny thing, not funny at all, but when we look back and we find actual real letters from either the Civil War participants out in the field or even the Revolutionary War, aren't you always amazed at how well they wrote?
Oh, man, yes.
I mean, it's like nobody writes like that now, not just because we do email, but nobody even composes. Even the Revolutionary War, I'm sidetracking here, but the letters they wrote from the field, I just think, how are these guys just people in an army and out in the mud? They should. I mean, I'm always amazed by the literacy that they have.
It's pretty amazing to read that stuff. I'm definitely struck by that.
The next two songs, I mean, could be written for a lot of, it could be written for a lot of different reasons, but they sound like a songwriter's songs. You're looking for the bridge and you can't change the rhyme. Maybe that's an accident, or maybe you just took advantage of the fact that sometimes you're writing a song looking out, as part of the lyric says, you're looking away, you're looking for the bridge. I don't know if that happens.
Yeah.
In reality, is it songwriting related? You can't change the rhyme. Is, you know, you started out writing the words are, it's put it this way without giving away the song, it's too late to change the whole rhyme scheme because things change.
Well, yes, and it's sort of like the song is filled about things starting out, you know, it's this happy love song,
right?
And then all of a sudden, you know, it didn't turn out that way, and go and change it. You think, I don't know, you know, just not being totally clear about where things are going, and so I can't really just change the story.
And it doesn't track well if you start changing the rhyme scheme.
Well, exactly, and sometimes you have a lot of the original idea be what it is. I think this is the only song I've ever written about a song in a way, but that's sort of what it is.
I think you may have mentioned it on the air. It might have been right before we started the Stevie Winwood song. How do you pull in a song like that? And I know you have a lot of great interest in different music, but where do you go to find what part of your brain or what part of the experience of the band brings you the Stevie Winwood tune?
Well, something has been just a hobby of mine for a long time while playing this music is listening to a variety of music and hearing different ways of doing it in my mind and thinking, well, could that be arranged as a bluegrass song? And I have tended to look into the classic country realm for songs, and a lot of those are easily adaptable to bluegrass music. I hadn't really done any pop covers, except years ago I did a Bruce Hornsby song from the early 90s or mid 90s. It was part of the Tin Cup soundtrack. But this was the only sort of pop hit that we ever covered. And I always liked the song. And we were thinking about, you know, thinking about the idea of doing something like that. But I never liked to do it for the novelty of it. I wanted it to be a song that really felt good. And Mark had worked the song up with a old band that he was in, and he was really enthusiastic about it. I always liked it, and I knew it would be a little bit challenging. There are a couple of little challenging factors in the song, so I fooled around with it and said, "Yeah, this is going to work. This will fit us well." And so that's how it happened. Just sitting around with the guitar and fooling with it and seeing how it lays.
I think it lays well, if it's even an appropriate use of the word. I like it. And,
probably not. It's probably lies not. Well.
Lies well, lays well. I liked it when I typically, Chris, this is not like a, this is just what I do out of laziness, I think. I'll get a CD and just start listening to it. And I may be, and usually I'm driving. I have a car that still has a CD player, and I know that's a rare thing. That's why I'll never get rid of this car. Yeah. But so I heard it come on before I even really knew what the list of songs were, and I thought, well, that's really cool. I liked it a lot, just because, I mean, I remember the song, but I also like the treatments. We've talked a little bit about Nyan's Regret, which is a great instrumental. Very, I mean, that's Mark and Gina, and
yep.
You have a good band. You have good players in your band. And we've mentioned this before, but I think the world of both of them. And Gina, of course, is just everything you could expect to fill in and be part of the band and all that she brings to it. But that's a great little Irish-sounding tune to me.
Yeah, there's one of the reasons the cover art sort of fits this. It's a Welsh painting.
I saw that.
Painted by a Welsh painter, Kiffin Williams, but just across the Irish Sea. We were in Ireland doing a tour it was last March, and we had some bad luck. We hit the worst winter storm they'd had since the 1980s, and they are not used to handling big amounts of snow in Ireland, and all transportation in the country ceased. Mark couldn't get in to Dublin. And we had almost half of our shows canceled on this tour, and which was not good, but we ended up with some downtime in Northern Ireland, and this supported a bunch of songwriting time, and at least three or four songs on this album came out of that.
Oh, cool.
And so one was this Nyan's Regret, and John Nyan is a bluegrass promoter in Ireland, and he's well known for any bluegrass musicians who have traveled over there. He's a great lover of the music, very knowledgeable, and very passionate about it. He's a character as well. So Nyan's Regret was that these shows were canceled.
Oh, okay.
The tour didn't work out. But along the way, we also I wrote some other songs on the album, including Bend of the Road and some others that came out of that. So, and Gina and I wrote Who You Want Me to Be in during this time as well.
See, there you go. That's that little glimpse of the kingdom when the good things happen. Then you can say, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It's between us. We can have our little sharing and our little happy times, and we don't have to be so negative. That's kind of neat. I'm going to skip over one song just for a second. Bend in the Road was released as a single.
Yes.
Essentially, right?
Yeah, it was our first single release.
Yeah. Do you notice that, is it just that I've only now paid attention to it? It's a great song. It's absolutely great. I still think it's one of the best songs of the year. And I may have even said that at one point. But there was another single also released. Do you notice more and more that is a trend, or is it just something that Mountain Home does, or that singles are being released in anticipation of an album dropping even 6-8 months later?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the business is changing so much. Everybody's just trying to get a handle on it. Part of this is related to the streaming revolution, and that is that the more often you put new stuff out there, the better off you are in that area. So I think it's part of, you know, Mountain Home's wanting to work on that and embrace that. But of course, it does sometimes get confusing from the radio standpoint, and you figure, well, what's your single and what's happening? But that is definitely a trend, and I say it's more like a digital version of going back to the 1940s or 50s,
yeah.
You know, when you go in and record some singles, and it might get compiled into an album later, and this is the first album that we really did in three chunks of four. We recorded Bend of the Road and a few other songs, and then we went in a few months later and recorded four more, and then not too long after that we finished it up. But I've never done an album that way. I kind of liked it, actually.
I think it's just from this side of the microphone, Chris. It's interesting to me because I know there's something else coming. And plus, when I'm laying out a program, that sounds very technical. It's not. I just play what I enjoy hearing. But then I know that's the newest song that I have. I don't have to think, well, what do I want to play off of an entire album if I only have the one for months at a time? Then I can sounds lazy, but I mean, I can choose that one. Plus, I did really, really enjoy that song, and the other one was released also. But I just noticed it seems to be happening more and more in the last year and a half, 2 years, that singles pop. They're like 45s. I mean, like you pick up a 45, and they may or may not be put into an album later, depending on how well they go. But it's interesting, intriguing to me. I'm not inside the industry at all, but I thought it was something I would ask you, because you are. On every level, you are on the inside. I'll watch her sale. You add in Megan Lynch Challey. I used to see her every year, and I haven't seen her forever. One of my all-time favorite, powerful, powerful fiddle players.
She's a great player. Of course, passed. I was just in Weezer, Idaho recently, and she was there as well teaching fiddle. She's a past champion there many, many times for their National All-Time Fiddlers Contest. It's a famous fiddle contest, but she loves to play waltzes. I was thinking of her. She had played on another waltz of ours in the previous release, and so her name popped into my head as somebody to add there, and that's another song that came out of this Irish downtime.
Oh.
It was kind of inspired by the surroundings a little bit,
we've talked about Glimpse of the Kingdom. Own the Blues, you add in a pedal steel. A guy named David Johnson, and that's the most country song sound you have on the album. Not that you're trying to make it that way, but pedal steel just does that. You can't help it.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it was a country song to begin with, and so which gave us the idea that David Johnson is a great multi-instrumentalist. He plays fiddle, actually, on Back in the Highlights as well. He plays on a bunch of Mountain Home stuff, various, you know, he can play anything at random. So I appreciate him doing this. This is a song I wrote that just kind of had that feel to it.
Damn,
I hadn't written a kind of country shuffle sort of song in a long time. And so, this happened. And, you know, a nice country subject matter. Leave me alone. I just want to feel bad.
Okay, I like that. I want to own the blues. That's right. I want this. Leave me alone. I want this. Oh, that's brilliant. I'm good about that.
That's an older country music kind of frame of mind. You know, current stuff is a little more about partying and, you know, taking the truck down to the river. But
that's right.
But
this is
more old school.
I hadn't grasped that.
I'm at the bar.
I had not grasped that historical bit. Now I like it even more. You also have on here, I Shouldn't Even Be Here, which was written by you, and then we talked a little bit about Who You Want Me to Be, which I think was written by you and Gina, but I Shouldn't Even Be Here. Let's not analyze this too much. I mean, I tend to do that when I'm by myself. I'm thinking, well, how deep is this song?
Well, there's some personal experience to it in that many other people have had experiences like this, but I have a couple of near-death kind of experiences when actually on tour, on international tours, and one in which I came pretty close to dying, another one was close enough. And so I thought, well, everything, you get the feeling, everything after this is a complete gift. I'm just glad to have this extra time, because for Roland, it looked like there wasn't going to be any. And then it was partly inspired by my uncle Bob, who was on life support.
Hmm.
I got this call from my aunt. It was just this past summer, and she said, "I'm sorry to tell you that your uncle Bob got very sick, and he's currently on life support. We're going in tomorrow and removing the ventilator. That was his wish." So I was sort of mourning the death of my uncle, and then I didn't hear much the next day, and I get this message from him. I said, he was a ventilator, and he sat up and asked for a beer. So he kind of came back to life, and so I went to visit him. I didn't think I'd ever see him again, and I went to visit him, and he was in better shape than the last time I'd seen him. And I said, he's got to be thinking. I shouldn't even be here. I thought I was gone, and he was getting.
And I think it makes a great point. And I think everybody at different points in their life, and I don't know about your personal experiences, and you don't need to share them. I get the point of what you're saying, but I think that everybody at some point needs to realize that, yeah, it's pretty cool even being around and the opportunities that avail themselves on a daily basis. And that I mean, that's what I get from this song. I don't like to overanalyze things. I do in my own spare time, but it doesn't have to be on the air. But yeah. I think that's what the song says to me, is that, you know, yeah, it's all things considered. It sounds like a WC. It sounds like a bad WC Fields joke. I'd rather be in Philadelphia, but I mean, you know, I mean, it's yeah. It's a great thing to be aware of, and at least every once in a while, be consciously aware of the fact that it's you shouldn't be here, maybe, or it's just great to be here. Either one.
Yeah, exactly. Everything from here on out is just not a gift that came my way, and that's kind of and it's easy to forget that. I forget it myself. The further away I get from that experience of almost not being here, and then I go back and I remember that you know, this is, I didn't think I'd get all this time.
Yeah, listen, Chris, it's a great. I like everybody in the band. I've always liked the sound that you have, and choosing road to me is just. I think I don't want to say this. Because it acts like it's better than the rest, but I think you keep getting better and stronger. And I think this entire album concept, maybe because the band, the core members of the band, maybe it's the 2 years, I don't know, but I think this is a phenomenal album for you. I really do.
I really appreciate this, Steve. And you know, artists always like to hear that, because we always like to be improving. We always try to do better than previously. We don't like to hear so much, and we get this too. Is that, man, I still think you're first on the best you ever did, and people mean that as a compliment, but from an artist standpoint, they think, oh no, I peaked at the first, and it's just been downhill ever since.
Well, we can put it this way: Chris Jones has not peaked yet.
That's good.
Yeah. Listen, you're headed off. First of all, there's a website, and I'm sure everybody can find the Choosing Road, and they can also find out. I'm going to guess if they look for Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, they're going to find you, right?
For sure.
You're headed out to where, Chris?
What's
that? You're headed to Europe. I know you're in Seattle.
Yes,
we're talking
about
a
European tour. Yeah, we're heading for a European tour, Germany and Switzerland, and coming back and playing in East Tennessee. And then with Bean Blossom in June. And also the Ogden Music Festival in Ogden, Utah, not too far from your area, Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
June 12th, so we're excited about that. And I've actually never played right in Columbus. So
it's the garden spot of Ohio, many people say.
Oh, yeah.
It's the capital.
But,
I took the bar exam there, Chris. That's my big memory of Columbus. I've had cases up there, but I took the bar exam in Columbus in 1979, so... I'm sure it's changed a lot.
So, do you sweat a little bit as you're driving through there?
No, but I will tell you this. This gets really boring, but I do still, 40 years later, you have the dream where you're looking at the test paper and there's nothing on it and there's no questions. You can't read it. But, so maybe I need to go to Columbus and exercise that demon out of me. Finally, I don't know how to do it. But it's a wonderful city, actually. They've had a nice regrowth. It's a nice city. So that's great. Chris, I know you're busy as heck, man. I know you're always doing things, and I meant the opening comments that you enhance and enlarge the entire discussion of music, subset of that being bluegrass, and I think that you do it at a level that I kind of think you're on your own on that, on all those many platforms, and I always appreciate your time. I know you're so busy, and appreciate you being available just to chat a bit about the new album.
No, I really appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Steve. It's always a good conversation, and really appreciate the professionalism and your passion for the music and what you do. So thank you.
All right, man. Listen, have a safe trip. I'll catch you somewhere down the road.
Yeah, sounds good, Steve.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, bye now.